Welcome to another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. The weatherman was wrong again. He said 15% chance of rain, and it looked like there was a lot of chance of rain today.
Freaking rain, like, all the time.
Lately. All the time.
I mean, we had, like, they promised us cool weather this week, and we had, like, one day that was decent, but it's still, like, cloudy and miserable. It's like, it's January weather in October.
Yeah, I think that they should just replace the weather guy with the black guy from Family Guy. And they're like, how's the weather, Ollie? It's going to rain! And then just play that clip all the time. And even if it doesn't rain, you're happy because it's not raining. Even though, you know, they said it was going to rain. Yeah.
You know, I mean, because they're not worth anything anyway.
It's true.
You know.
Yeah, they're not much.
Forget them.
Yeah.
You know, and but other than that, yeah, just a lot of rain and the Astros are done. We sat here just on Monday night a few days ago recording and talked about how they were coming back home with a series tied, and that didn't go well.
No.
And,
you know, Boston is clicking, man. I will say that, you know, we had some calls that, you know, should have gone our way, that didn't go our way, you know,
and then our buddy at Critical Thinking, Miguel, has to troll us.
Yeah,
he's a Boston
man.
Fan living in Houston, and it's like he's making our heartbreak extended by rubbing it in a little salt in the wound.
I know, man.
You know, I vowed revenge on him somehow.
One day we'll put like Icy Hot in his underwear, like in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes, Miguel.
Yes.
We will get you for this. So you better watch out if we do a Critical Thinking crossover with them.
That's right.
He might have Icy Hot waiting for him.
Yeah, we'll pull.
He'd have to get a hold of his underwear first.
Yeah, we would. Be like, yeah, I have to use the bathroom.
Miguel's underwear could be frightening.
It could be. Could be full of holes and, you know, dad. He's like deep into dad mode, so he could have like, you know, the underwear with a lot of ventilation holes in them and stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Everyone's got that one pair where you're like, you know, it's still comfortable, you know, even though whenever I bend over, have to trust someone.
Or you put them on, the toe might go through the wrong hole.
Yeah. The toe might go through the wrong hole. Yeah, pretty much.
But, other than the Astros let us down, the week was okay.
Yeah.
You know, nothing too exciting happened.
The Texans are tied for first place.
But we talked about them on the last show.
Yeah.
We haven't recorded. They haven't played again since we recorded.
I just want to end on a good note if we're talking on sports, which I, you know.
It's
hey,
not a good note, though. They still suck.
It's still, I mean, it's 3-3.
They're horrible.
They are. They're a bad team, man. And Jacksonville just traded for Carlos Hyde. We'll talk a little bit of sports. Yeah, they traded for Carlos Hyde. Jacksonville, let's see if we lose or not this coming Sunday against Jacksonville.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. But
they're all we have right now to look up to.
I've got college football. My Longhorns are 5-1.
Yeah, so, they're really good this year. It looks like Herman just need a little time. They've grasped the offense pretty well.
Yeah. So I've got that.
Consolation prize.
I was looking. I was like, no Astros today. Oh, the Longhorns will be on. Oh, but it's a bye week. Thanks, Saturday, for sucking.
That's right. It is Saturday.
But no, we did have Michael's team had their homecoming pool party. We went to that this afternoon. They were supposed to play today, but the game got canceled because of the rain. But they still had the party, and the boys had a good time.
That's good.
Should sleep well tonight here in a little bit.
There we go.
Ultimate goal.
Yeah, whenever your wife looks at you and she says, put on Paw Patrol and let the kids fall asleep to it, you know it's a good night.
Right.
Yep.
And she just gave me some look over there in the background. But other than that, thank you, as always, for tuning in to the Rebel Radio Podcast and anyone listening on WBLZmedia.com on Ironic Radio, where you can find us every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. Central, 3 to 5 for you Eastern folks, like the people in Boston that just beat us. Yeah, I'm still a little bitter. I'm sorry.
Do they even exist right now?
No. Boston is dead to me. That city
dead.
Right now.
Yeah.
They don't exist. Sorry. Fucking shit. Oh. All right.
Man.
So let's get into the show. So we always start the show with Download This, and this might not be the best Download This ever this week because I kind of slacked, but what did you download or watch this week besides Astros baseball?
I decided that I was going to watch Austin Powers Goldmember.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. I was, you know, the The best part of that film for me is the beginning.
Oh, yeah, the spoof beginning with
yeah,
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, with Tom Cruise, yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow, and Kevin Spacey, which, you know, I guess we have
pre-creepy
to mention.
Pre-creepy Kevin
yeah,
Spacey.
Pre-creepy Kevin Spacey. Danny DeVito is Mini-Me. And and then at the end, Goldmember is John Travolta. I completely forgot about that.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
They continue the movie at the end, and of course... there's there's also that dance scene with Britney Spears, and I remember her one request was that she would be a fembot. She's like, "I'll be in it, but I want to be a fembot." And she's like, "I want gun nozzles poking out of my nibblies," and so that's what she did. And she's in there too. Yeah, John Travolta is really good as Goldmember. Yeah. He does a little bit of his Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, the Austin Powers movies were kind of fun. You know, they were a throwback to the Naked Gun and Police Academy spoof movies of the day, and spoofing the Bond films and other spy films. And Mike Myers did a good job with those. And there was some talk at one point about reviving the franchise, but I remember reading recently that Mike Myers has said now that he thinks the time is gone and there's no reason to do it anymore.
And ended on a good note. And then I was watching it. And I was, you know, you think about stuff that was funny then and no one made a huge deal about, but things, you know, now people would probably make a huge deal about. He's at this party and he's singing that song about how his daddy's never there. Right. And then there's the two Asian girls and they're like, "Fuck me, fuck you." And they're twins. And he's like, "Twins." And they're like, "We give you special massage." And I'm like, how many people would be outraged? And they're like, "Oh no, Asian twins, they're going to massage you."
Right.
Like, how stereotypical is that? And then, you know, I could just see a boycott for Austin Powers 3.
So many older, and those movies aren't even that old, but
they're not.
Like, especially the 80s. Like, you watch movies in the 80s, and the word faggot has dropped a lot in movies in the 80s. And now you couldn't dare drop that word in a film.
Nope.
You know, unless it was like a
fruitcake.
Artsy film or fruitcake where it dealt with, you know, homosexual characters or whatever, and it was used derogatory in some way to show how, like, they, you know, it would have to
you'd
be
have to have a homosexual
reason.
Actor
yeah.
I mean or like, or
it,
director
it is funny how times have changed and things in films and the film we're doing today. I felt I had watched it in a couple of years, so I watched it last night, and we'll talk about it more later. Felt how relevant some parts of this film are today, especially in the aspect of bullying in schools and things like that.
Oh,
but that's a whole other talk. Anything else you downloaded, watched, streamed this week?
That was it. It was just one movie.
Yeah.
I didn't do too much extracurricular stuff. I did a lot last week, so I guess I, you know, balanced out with me doing just the minimum this week.
Yeah, I didn't really watch much this week. I actually forgot Daredevil Season 3 hit. Otherwise, I would have stayed up last night and watched the first episode. I watched Let the Right One In last night, and I would have watched the first episode. But I was really tired from staying up watching the Astros, so I went on to bed. And I downloaded an app again, an app this week. That there's this app for people who don't know, and I just thought it was cool because I saw about it on a Halloween website called Living Wine Labels.
Mm-hmm.
And you download it, and you can scan wine labels, like 19 Crimes and The Walking Dead wine that's out.
Yeah.
And it will tell you the story of your character. And it's based on augmented reality, but, like, it's really impressive because, like, the wine bottle is in your hand and you're holding it, and you're like, how is this video playing? It really... Like, I don't get that impressed by technology anymore because we live with all this technology, but it's really cool.
I remember
seeing
it.
Like, the wine bottle starts talking to you, and he's telling you, like, I was found for murder in 1898 or whatever, and it's really, really neat little app.
That's the Rogue 21, right?
Or the 19 Crimes.
19 Crimes.
But yeah, Rogue 21. There's several companies that have these living wine labels, and it's really neat. And I downloaded the app out of curiosity, and I probably should have been doing it while I was at work. I was looking at some wine bottles and trying it out. I was like, this is a really cool app.
That is awesome.
If you had time to sit down and look at it. And like, again, I don't get that impressed with that stuff anymore because we're surrounded by cool apps and technology, but it's really neat. It's called Living Wine Labels, and if you're into wine and stuff, you can download it. And it's fitting for Halloween because 19 Crimes are stories of murders and things like that, kind of dark characters, and The Walking Dead wine that's in stores now. So it fits with
cool.
our theme for the month.
Yeah.
That's my download this for this week.
There we go.
It's a cool app, but it's kind of neat. So, go, you know, it's free on your app stores if you want to check it out. But so let's get into our next movie on Halloween Horrors Month here on the Rebel Radio Podcast. And we chose a Swedish film from 2008 called Let the Right One In. And it was remade in 2010 called Let Me In. And a lot of people might be familiar with that one. But the original Swedish version is the better film of the two by far.
I agree.
And it's a really remarkable, beautiful shot, really wonderful little film. And I say little because it's not high budget.
It's not.
It's cinematography-wise, it's absolutely fantastic looking considering the sets they use and stuff. And it's based on a novel of the same name. And the movie was quite critically well-received. It's still sitting at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's a might be one of my favorite vampire movies of all time. And I saw this for the first time sometime in 2009 after it was – it had a very, very limited theatrical release in America, maybe like L.A. and New York and for a couple of weeks. So most people in America discover this through Blu-ray, DVD, or – Amazon and Netflix, and it's on Hulu right now, I believe.
Yeah, I didn't know that this was the original film that was made on the book adaptation until you told me. Oh, you know, you need to first. You're like, you need to watch the Let Me In on, and it was on. It was whenever it first came to Netflix.
Let Me In been on Netflix for a long time.
And then I watched it, and then you're like, yeah, you know, Let the Right One In is even better. I was like, there's a Let the Right One In? I was like, is that a sequel? You're like, no, it came out before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I had no idea. You know, and watching this for the first time, it really is nicely shot. And it looks like, you know, it pretty much goes screen for screen with the, you know, with the 2010 one. But this one's way better. Just the way the director had his approach, trying to, you know, show you things from Oscar's perspective, you know, how he was viewed as, you know, kind of an accessory, not something that was really, you know, cared for, but something that, you know, someone that had to be just dealt with because he was there. Right. And so, you know, it's...
And for people that aren't familiar with it, the story is about a young boy who's and kind of an outcast. He's kind of bullied in school, and he lives with his mother in an apartment, and his parents are divorced, and he is just looking for his place in life as a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, he's discovering the world, and he befriends this little girl who is mysterious to him, but yet she seems to want to be his friend, but yet she continually tells him she can't be his friend, and he doesn't understand why. And it turns out that this little girl is a vampire, and she lives with a man who kind of kills for her.
Yeah.
And to get blood for her and stuff so that she doesn't have to kill. And the book expands on that relationship quite a bit. The movie keeps it more subtle, like why he works with her. And it never says how old she is or how long she's been doing this. And she befriends Oscar, even though she keeps telling him she can't be friends with him and stuff. But yet she stays close to him throughout the movie because they have this bond of she's an outcast in a way that she's a vampire and can't really be friends with people. And he's an outcast from his school because he's bullied and he's not liked by anybody. He doesn't really have a lot of friends. So they develop this friendship that becomes a strong bond throughout the movie that leads to...
Leads to basically what the adult does for her now, and you see that it's pretty much the cycle. It's the ending of one relationship, really, and the beginning of another, and you get the feeling of, you know, hey, this is a cycle that looks like it's continued. You know, Ellie, she's, you know, projected to be about 300 years old. Mm-hmm. That's, I don't think it's ever truly confirmed, but I think that's what the
and the film takes place in 1982, which is very nice because it gives it a feel of a timelessness that can take place in any time, but yet a bit old-timey feeling, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not super modern. And the young actors are Kare Hedebrandt. I probably said that wrong.
I am,
Lena Lee Anderson, who are fantastic young actors. They were about 11 years old when they filmed this. And they went through a long, like almost a year-long casting process for this film to find the right two kids for this movie because the parts were so important. And you never know what you're going to get with child actors in movies, but these two are really, really good.
Yeah.
I mean, like almost Oscar-worthy good. They are really good in the roles.
Yeah, Oscar is Oscar-worthy.
All right.
But he does a really good job just, you know, playing this, like you said, this kid who's trying to, find his place in life. His parents seem like they don't pay a whole lot of attention to him, and part of that is the directing. You know, Anderson, he didn't want the adults looking at Oscar at all. They wanted you to truly see things, you know, from Oscar's perspective, and you do get that feeling.
It's funny, I didn't know. I've seen the movie several times, probably four or five times, maybe not several, but I never noticed the camera angles are almost purposely at child level. The adults always seem to be standing up,
especially above. When he's playing. Yeah. He's playing, you know, board games. And then, you know, he you can really just see the kid's face, and then the adult.
The mom
it's
is
almost
always
like the head's cut.
The mom
off
is always in the background or in a shadow.
Yeah,
you don't really get a clear view of her face except for the one scene where she's yelling at him. Yeah.
Even whenever he walks back to the table with the vodka bottle, mm-hmm. You really only see the vodka bottle. So it's like that just further proves your point that the child would probably only be able to see about hand height of an adult.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting. Even the camera angles, I didn't even think about that. But yeah,
directed by Thomas Alfredson.
Anderson.
Has done American films too. He went on to direct Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy a couple years ago, which is actually a really good movie too. And but the cinematography for this was done by, I'm not even going to try to say his name, Hoyt Van Hoytema.
Hoyt.
But
yeah, Mr. Hoyt.
But he's one who brings this together with the amazing shots of the film and the atmosphere of it. But again, the movie is essentially about the relationship of Oscar and Ellie and how they come together. And there's a lot of interpretation in this film. Like, Ellie is in the book it's more obvious that she is androgynous.
Yeah.
Or it might have been a boy that was castrated.
Well, that,
and they allude to it in
this
movie.
They do allude to it, yeah. And I wanna say that she's referred to as a boy mm-hmm. in the book once.
Yes.
And over in here, it's very ambiguous.
Right.
Because I think, the director that's got to be a hard thing to deal with.
They felt people weren't ready for that. They didn't know how it would be accepted, so they wanted to keep it more open to interpretation.
And then the U.S., they're just like, let's make her a girl. Let's make it Chloe. So I don't know if that's because they just didn't want to deal with it at all, mm-hmm. or if they just thought it'd be easier to just say, hey, this is a girl, is a boy.
Just like the character of Hakan, her surrogate father, who was murdering for her, he, in the book, it's obvious that he's kind of a pedophile.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a creep. And in the movie, they never do mention that because, again, they felt that was too much. But they allude that this guy has got some issues, obviously, mm-hmm. If he's willing to do this. And his character is much more in depth in the book and then in the movie. In the movie, they simply make it like you get that he's been taking care of her for a long time, but yet she's the boss because she kind of tells him what to do.
Yeah.
And he's murdering these people for her so she can stay alive, but yet he's starting to fall apart. He's starting to fail.
He's getting older.
Yeah.
There's things that he can't do anymore. He's not as efficient, in the woods. He wasn't able to collect the blood mm-hmm. from the guy that he axed. The dog pounces up on him, starts barking, and then, now, there's evidence, and she has to go out on her own, get her own food after that. But it's weird. They don't have her killing a lot.
No.
In fact, even in the last scene, you don't really see her kill a lot. You just see body parts flying everywhere.
We're definitely going to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more.
Yeah, and part of that was they wanted her to have this. Even though she might have been alive for 300 years, they want her to have this childlike innocence to her. The fact that even though she was a vampire, she still was a child in her mind and in her soul, despite mm-hmm. how long she'd been alive. And they direct her, and even in the book, she doesn't kill a lot. I think there's maybe a little bit more in the book, but not a lot, because they wanted you to give the aspect that she did it only because necessary. They didn't want her to be the typical cold-blooded killer vampire. They wanted her to have an innocence to her because it is a child. And you're right, that you only see, and then when you do see it, it's very dark. Mm-hmm. Even the scene in the bathroom, she takes him in the bathroom, the door is closed, you only hear it. You don't actually see her doing anything. And but there's certainly a darkness to her character. Every time she's on edge of fixing a kill or sees blood, like there's this sense of intensity to those scenes where you know that this is a violent creature.
Yeah, and she really turns animal-like. And I know you're probably going to talk about it, but the way that they get the sound effects was very interesting. Mm-hmm. They had her bite into sausage, bite into grapes multiple times just to try and get the right sound for, fangs biting into something. And then the eyes opening and closing, they did it by kind of twirling grapes in their fingers. It's like rolling it. And I guess they got a really good sound off of that. It kind of reminds me of not quite like Star Wars, but a little like Star Wars.
Yeah.
It took interesting sounds mm-hmm. and made them into something bigger.
And because a lot of the movie takes place in the one apartment building set, and I think I read the parts of the apartments were still under construction, so some of them didn't have roofs. So that was another reason there were things where they had to film at a certain level because they didn't want to show the ceiling and stuff.
Okay.
They were able to find a building they could use that wasn't overly expensive and things like that. But the movie definitely the cinematography we were talking about definitely has a certain atmosphere to it of like kind of a dreary kind of town in Sweden, but not like but not dark.
Yeah,
not at the same time. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because this after all is a vampire film.
Kind of like a Tim Burton like kind of thing.
And the word vampire is only mentioned once in the movie.
Yeah.
When he asks her, are you a vampire? Straight up. And other than that, it's never mentioned. It's always just alluded to that what's going on in the movie. And I think that's a really neat. And it's not your typical vampire movie. There's things like whenever she's at the hospital and visiting Hakan, who when he almost gets caught when he's trying to get blood by the teenagers, he mm-hmm. pours acid on himself to disfigure himself because he knows he's caught.
Yeah.
And he ends up in the hospital. And she visits him, and you don't see it, but you hear, like, flapping of wings. They allude to she can fly like a vampire. And she even tells Oscar, how'd you get up here in my room? Because they live on the third floor. She's like, I flew. So they never see it, but they use vampire lore like that.
Yeah.
And tie it all together, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, they really kind of, you know, push and redefine, you know, some of the stereotypes of vampires. You know, the myth that goes along with the main title, let me in. I'll paraphrase it, even though this is Let the Right One In. Let me in, you know, is what happens whenever you don't, you know, you're not invited in. And she walks in and...
Well, old vampire lore is that a vampire has to be invited into your home.
But it's like, you know, there's
it's never been seen before. In fact, most vampire purists always said they don't talk about it. They said that's just something that you assume can't be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Vampire Diaries, you just, it's like there's an invisible wall. And it's funny because Oscar's like, is there a wall right. that you can't get through that's just stopping you? And for them, it's like in that show, it's like an invisible wall. In this one, it's like, yeah, you can walk in, but you're going to bleed profusely through like everywhere you can bleed, you're going to bleed.
And that's a really important scene in the movie. So she walks in and at first nothing happens. And I think it's a really brilliantly directed scene because it builds this tension, like what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden Ellie starts kind of hemorrhaging and shaking and blood starts coming from her eyes and her ears and her nose. And then Oscar freaks out and he's like, okay, you can come in, you can come in. And it's the first time ever in history that we've ever seen on film what could happen to a vampire if they're not invited in. And she
looks like she did friggin' heroin or something. She's got blood coming out of her eyes, her ears. It's pretty freaky. Freaky scene.
And it would be interesting to see that if the vampire genre ever makes a comeback, which obviously it tried with the Twilight movies, but we'll...
Sparkle.
Yeah. But we all know how that was received. But the true vampire mythologies, if they're ever revived again,
mm-hmm.
will a director or a writer go back to this? And will we see this again now that it's out there? You know, because it happens in Let Me In also in the American remake. The scene is in there, too. So, you know, it's now part of vampire lore, I think, in some ways.
It's
really neat. And that's the cool thing about mythology, especially mythology like this that's over 100 years old. We've been having stories about vampires, and it's okay sometimes to add new things to the stories and to make new things. And purists sometimes be damned, like, oh, we can't change that, but why can't you? You know, let's add to the aspect of things and make the mythology better.
Yeah, they do a lot for the lore and the mythology in this film.
Yeah.
You know, her just being able to go from, like, whenever Oscar's mom gets home and she's in the apartment with him and they run, you know, to the window and all of a sudden she's out the window and next door. You don't even see the in-between.
Right.
So, you know, did she fly? Did she hop over?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think wings played on that part.
Yeah.
I don't think we heard wings.
But, you know, the importance part of this, the most important aspect of this film is the relationship between Oscar and Ellie. And a lot has been written about it in the 10 years since the film came out, about is it childlike innocence or because she's been around for so long, is it more to it? And when I've read the book and saw the movie, I never saw anything really wrong with it. I never felt it was over adult.
Yeah.
But there were the one bad side to critics on this film said that their relationship was a little too sexual. And I never got that. I felt like these were two 11, 12-year-old kids that are going to do things and talk about things that any other 12-year-old kids talk about, going steady and having a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And people, I think as I was watching it last night it's not goofy. It's not kids being silly. It is more taken from an adult aspect. But I didn't find anything weird about it or anything wrong with it.
No.
And Ellie constantly tells Oscar, I can't be your friend. I can't. And so, therefore, to me, that takes away from any weird aspects of it that people try to say. And even the novel took some heat for it, too, when it came out.
Yeah. And I didn't get that from it.
I didn't either. But I also felt that because Oscar is bullied in school, and that's the subplot of the film, is he's constantly bullied in school. These three boys
always picking on
him, calling him Piggy. They're hitting him.
Yeah.
They're chasing him to the bathroom. And he was looking for something to latch on to. And here's this young lady, Ellie, who is nice to him. And that's all he knows. He doesn't, and even when he asks her the vampire, she says something like that to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't faze him, because to him, this is the first person that has treated him at his age level like another person. And so why is he not going to latch on? And the bullying part of this movie, in some ways, is like, I found really relevant watching it, because we hear so much of the news now about kids being bullied at school, and Oscar's got a bit of a creepy side to him with a knife. You know, he's like calling him Piggy back and acting like he's stabbing him when he's stabbing a tree and things like that. But yet, I also never felt that Oscar was really going to do anything.
No.
That was his own feelings coming out.
Yeah.
But then Ellie shows him, like, hey, you're a good person. You have a good heart. Don't be afraid to fight back. And he does at some point when he hits him with a stick when they're on a field trip or the playground near school.
Yeah.
And he stands up for himself. And he realizes, wow, that felt good. I can stand up for myself without being... You know, I don't have to be violent, but yet I can stand up for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, Ellie helps him. She's got her own demons, obviously, being a 300-year-old vampire. But she helps him see the good in him and the fact that, you know, you don't have to be bullied by these kids. And it's a really important part of the relationship that at the end of the movie, the one kid he hurt his ear, he has an older brother who's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
And most time when a younger brother is an asshole, they get it from somewhere. And we realize where he gets it from. And so they set up a trap with him at the swim meet at the pool to...
Basically to just jack him up.
They're going to jack him up. They might even kill him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they allude to that. These boys might kill him. And there's one boy in the group that's kind of more innocent than the others. He wears the sweater, and he's kind of like, he knows what they're doing is wrong, but yet he's almost like the Oscar of the group. He hangs with them because he wants to fit in, but he knows it's not right what they're doing.
But he can't do anything to stop it,
otherwise the boys are going to be mean to him, too. So they're at the swimming pool. As Oscar's going to evening classes for weightlifting and swimming and things like that. So he goes to a swim meet that night. Well, they kind of call him to say, are you coming? They kind of pull him into a trap. So they set a fire in the dumpster outside, and I want to set up this scene because it's a really important scene in the movie.
Yes.
It's how the movie ends, essentially. And so to get the teacher to go out, then the bad kids come in there and they make all the other kids leave. And there's Oscar in the pool stuck by himself. And they tell him, if you don't hold your breath for 3 minutes, we're going to cut your eye out. An eye for my brother's ear. And this scene is – a lot's been said about the scene I've read. Like, people complain that it's too assumptuous as to what happens, but it's so freaking brilliantly done. So they hold Oscar's head under the water, and they're going to drown him if he doesn't react. And the next thing you know, and again, Thomas Alfredson as directing does a good sense of building and intensity, just like he did when Ellie starts bleeding when she comes to the house. Here he builds intensity, like, are they really going to kill Oscar?
Or is he just going to drown?
Right. And the next thing you know, you hear screams, you hear noises, you see one of the kids' heads fall in the pool. Next thing you know, the head that was holding Oscar in the water, the arm lets go and it falls in the pool, cut off. And then Ellie reaches in and grabs Oscar and she saves his life. And she's got blood in her face and everything. She came and she murders these three boys to save him. And she lets the one boy of the group live because he was the one that was trying to do the right thing. And he sat there in the heart of this all. And in the corner, you see the one boy off the side of the pool with no head. You see the other boy looks like she bit him, the brother. And then the older brother looks like she sliced his arm off and looks like she ripped him apart.
Yeah.
She gave him the worst.
Yeah, he was ripped up, man.
And you don't see the violence straight on, but it's almost like in Reservoir Dogs or No Country for Old Men, where you don't see the robbery, you don't see the shootout at the hotel, but yet you know what happened. And it's remarkably done.
Jackie's watching it with me, and she just sees this pair of feet just start skimming across the top of the pool, and she's like, what the heck? And I'm like, keep watching. And
it's fantastic. Yeah. It's a great, great scene, and then you see the snow falling, of like, it's almost like this peacefulness after this violentness of her killing these three boys. And at this point, we also should mention that Oscar is pretty much estranged from his parents at this full point. His dad is busy drinking. Did you get the allude that his dad is gay?
I thought he was weird.
Yeah, kind of weird. This other guy walks in there, and they didn't really explain that scene. Well, it's kind of weird. And so he realizes he needs nothing to do with his parents. So after the snow finishes falling, the next scene we see a train, and Oscar's on the train, and he has Ellie in a makeshift coffin suitcase. And it, again, we didn't even mention that Hakan, who ends up in the hospital because he pours acid in his face,
yeah.
He gives his last blood to Ellie, then he kills himself.
Yes.
So she has no caretaker anymore. So Oscar becomes that caretaker. Like you said earlier, it becomes full cycle. In the book, there were some weird things where Hakan actually escapes from the hospital. It kind of becomes like this mutant who kind of preys on people for a little while.
Oh, weird.
And Ellie ends up finding him, killing him. It's a really kind of strange part of the book. It might have worked in the movie, and that's probably the only part in the novel that didn't work. It was really weird.
Yeah.
So I could see why they didn't put it in the movie, and it wasn't that important. But the movie ends again with the cycle being complete, whereas Oscar's going to become Ellie's caretaker.
And we didn't talk about the girl that she bit. And then all the cats attack her.
The cats attack her.
Yeah. And she falls down the stairs, and they bring her into the hospital, and they have to strap her down. And that's whenever she tells her boyfriend or whatever that, you know, it's the girl. She must have infected me. And then, you know, she tells him to open the blinds, and he opens the blinds, and she is just engulfed in flames. And that's a really cool looking shot too.
Yeah. Just a lot of really neat stuff in this for a vampire lore movie. And, you know, I know this was the first time you'd seen the Swedish version, but really, like, what did you really think about? I mean, where would you rank this? I mean,
vampire
movie.
It's up there. It's definitely up there. I really liked maybe it's overrated or maybe it's underrated. It just depends. It's very subjective. But I really like Bram Stoker's Dracula. I don't think it's that good.
When's the last time you watched it?
I know.
It's pretty horrible.
I watched it, I think, last time was like 5 years ago.
It's pretty
bad. It was hard to get through. The beginning's pretty good. They had some good actors in there. I don't think it came together the way it was supposed to. Gary Oldman as Dracula, you had Keanu Reeves as a real estate or a lawyer.
We'll talk about some more vampire movies. I want to get you too far into it, but this movie, Let the Right One In, it's way better.
It's definitely one or two, top one or two.
Yeah, Alfredson and Lindquist, the author, didn't really want the American remake to happen because they were afraid that why remake a good film already? Because this movie won a lot of festival awards. Let the Right One In did really well at film festivals. It did real well critically. And Matt Reeves, of course, directed the remake. And they changed some of the characters' names, some aspects, but for the most part, it's the same movie. Matt Reeves claims he didn't watch Let the Right One In, just like Martin Scorsese claims he didn't watch Infernal Affairs before he made The Departed, but there's just too many scenes that are the same. I'm still never going to buy that Scorsese never saw Infernal Affairs, and I'm never going to buy that Reeves never saw Let the Right One In.
It's just
too many shots
that
are the same.
Yeah.
And, I think the only difference in Let Me In is it's a young yuppie couple that Ellie kills instead of the old man.
Yeah.
You know, but she kills both of them in Let Me In, if I remember right. She kills the girl and the guy. But she's not called Ellie in that. She had a different name.
Yeah, it was a different name.
Owen was the boy, and I can't remember hers. But I think it's a good movie too, but not as good as this. I think this is since we rebooted the show with episode 80, this is the third foreign film we've done. We've done Django, we did Hardboiled, and now this. And some people, there's people out there that love movies, but they won't watch foreign films. And I always tell them, you don't know what you're missing, because there are some really fantastic films that aren't made in America. And there was a stigma at a time back in the 80s and 90s that foreign films, unless they were Asian action films and stuff or art house films, they didn't get a lot of love. People weren't, foreign films weren't really well looked at. But in the last 20 years, though, there's been a lot more directors making foreign films that are really remarkable, like Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth or Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And this film, Let the Right One In, which is
another film with Chow Yun-Fat, Crouching Tiger.
And Let the Right One In is a remarkable, remarkable film. And if you love vampires and love horror, and this isn't your classical horror, it's not going to scare you, but it's still a horror film.
It really is.
If you really take the innocence of Oscar and Ellie away, it's a horrifying aspect for a little girl who's only 12 years old to be a vampire for 400 years. Imagine what she's been through. and the tournament, and Leigh Anderson, however you say her name, does a remarkable job portraying that in her eyes, in her scene. When Oscar tells her, "You smell funny," because she hasn't drinking blood,
yeah,
there's a sadness in her eyes. She's really good. And they didn't use her voice because she had a little girl voice. They wanted the voice to be more androgynous, so they dubbed her with a different actress. But that's okay. The performance still comes out in her face and her features, and she's really good in this movie.
In fact, the features and the face expressions are so good, the director originally had planned for this to be a silent film. Mm-hmm. But changed his mind whenever he realized that, you know, hey, a silent film in 2008, it's probably not going to be well received.
Yeah.
But you know what? If this movie was made, you know, decades ago, maybe
it might have been.
Maybe it would have worked.
But this is a really great movie, and I encourage anyone. Like I said, it's on Hulu right now. If you haven't seen Let the Right One In, and it's not a terrible English dub. I watched it in Swedish with the theatrical subtitles because I like to watch movies mm-hmm. the original language. But this does have one of the better dubs on it, you know. But if you can and you have the time, watch it in the original language. Did you watch it in the?
I watched it subtitle.
Yeah. Because it is really well done. Before we talk about some of our favorite vampire movies of all time, though, any final thoughts on Let the Right One In?
It's really good. One of the best vampire movies. It's obviously better than Twilight. I don't care what anyone says.
And I know you were skeptical because we were talking back in September. What movies want to do for Halloween? And I threw this one out there, and I know probably you're reading my text like, oh, screw Mark, I don't want to do that. But I hope you really found something that you will enjoy and come back to every October.
And I think that
I love this movie.
Yeah, I was. It's a little slow at times, but
it's a good slow.
Yeah, no, it's a good slow, and I know that like my lineup would have looked a whole lot different than yours. It would have been more traditional, but it's good that we branch out and we challenge our listeners and we challenge ourselves to watch different films and take different things from them. So, kudos. Yeah. I always take direction from the host, the host with the most, and this was a good film. This was a really good suggestion.
And my thoughts are, if you haven't seen it, watch this movie. If you've ever loved vampires or loved really good horror films and really good, this isn't just a good horror, this is a good movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine if I had made a list of 2008 best films, this would probably be in my top 10.
Yeah,
I know it made a lot. I know Roger Ebert had this as one of his top 10 films of 2008. It's already 10 years later showed up on list of 100 movies you should see before you die. So the movie is really good, and it's something that a lot of people still haven't discovered yet, even 10 years later. And I hope they do, and maybe we just help some people here on the show discover this film.
Hopefully.
And definitely a little more serious episode today than Freddy Krueger last week, talking about some silliness of Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
But this is not a movie to really laugh about, because it does have some serious tones in it.
A lot of serious tones.
But it's really, really well done.
Yeah.
And I was looking back on the 30 films or so we've done on the show, like, this could be one of the best movies we've done as far as a really good film. And
yeah,
we've done
just some a great complete films, film. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, we have. We've done Enter the Dragon.
And
we've
did
done
the Dark Knight.
Yeah, we did Dark Knight.
A Star Wars. I mean, we've done.
Yeah.
And this is right up there. And as my friend Naomi, who gave us a huge compliment this week, she sent me a text saying that we do a good mix of sci-fi genre and action and appealing to everybody. And that's what we're trying to do here. And we hope that this did that with a really, really good film, if you haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
So that being said, this is a vampire movie, even though it only says the word vampire once in it. Do you have favorite vampire movies over the years? And besides Bram Stoker's Dracula,
as a kid, watching Bram Stoker's Dracula come on Encore.
Is that because it had boobs?
Because it had boobs, man. I was like, you know, I as a kid, you're like, man, that would be cool if all these naked vampire women would just pop out of the sheets and start crawling towards me and
right.
start like, you know, I guess I don't want to get into that.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty, that's pretty hot. Yeah, I was envy of Keanu in that film.
Right.
But there's... You know, it starts getting splotchy after the beginning, you know. It starts off pretty good.
It's been a while since I've seen him. I remember it starting out pretty good. And Gary Oldman's excellent in it.
Yeah.
Oldman's always excellent. But, yeah, that's one I always – I mean, I go back to the original 1930s Dracula. You know, that's always great.
That is good.
The Monster Squad.
Monster Squad,
it's
yeah.
It's a fun one.
Dracula's a badass in that film.
I know people talk about Tom Cruise, but I like Interview with the Vampire. I'm sorry, I like it. I think it's good.
It's good.
I enjoy that movie. I know there's people probably cringing, oh, Tom Cruise. I know there's Anne Rice people out there that are really big on her that can't stand it because of Tom Cruise, that they say that Stuart Townsend was closer to what Lestat should be in Queen of the Damned. But Queen of the Damned's not as good as Interview the Vampire.
No, it's not.
But, I mean, it's got a cool soundtrack with Jonathan Davis.
Oh,
but,
yeah, Down with the Sickness.
Yeah. But I like Interview the Vampire. I think that's a really good one. You know, those are the two that stick out, the Monster Squad, Interview the Vampire, and the original Dracula.
Now, Queen of the Damned, man, I wish it would have been better because it was Aaliyah's, you know,
final role.
Yeah, it was her final role. She was, you know, starting to get into the acting world. She had done, I believe she did Romeo Must Die. With Jet Li, which is one of my favorite Jet Li movies.
I always forget about that. That's actually a good movie.
It really is. Yeah. The football scene, whenever he's playing football, and then he gets helicopter tackled and just gets hit on his butt.
The Lost Boys is always
Lost
a
Boys,
classic from the 80s.
And I want to say Colt 45 did Lost Boys.
Yeah, they did last recently. Year. Randy and Brandon and those guys at Colt 45. Was it last year or just recently? I thought they did The Lost Boys, maybe.
Last week.
The Lost Boys, that's been one I haven't seen in a while, but that's a good vampire movie. I'm trying to think of anything else off the top of my head, but those are the ones that I remember the most growing up watching, and I like the idea of vampires. And again, we've talked about this on the show. You've always leaned more towards the slashers and gore fest, where I always like more the classical horror movies, like the old Universal Pictures and stuff. Like, I like mythology type characters, like a wolf or a vampire or a creature. You know, that's just what I lean more towards.
That's cool.
But I'll still watch the slasher fic.
Yeah.
And by the way, Naomi, if you're listening, I DVR'd Halloween, the original 1978.
There we go.
So I can sit down and watch it between now and hopefully next week's episode so I can talk about it.
Hey, there's boobs in the first five minutes.
Well, it's on AMC, so it might be edited a little bit.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But even AMC's not going to edit that much. They might edit out the nudity, but they'll still have the blood in it. I mean, hell, they air The Walking Dead on TV.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so I did DVR Halloween just yesterday because they've been playing them on AMC, so I will sit down and watch it. Maybe tonight after record. I don't know.
Yeah.
I still need to watch Ant-Man and Wasp off your voodoo, so I'm going to try to do that tonight.
Yeah, please do.
But that's all. Anything else on vampires before we talk about today's very short news briefs?
Yeah. No, I got nothing, man. We left it on the table.
Yeah. That's it. So let's talk some news. It has been a really slow week for news. But two Friday nights in a row, Marvel and Netflix drop a bomb. Last week they canceled Iron Fist. Last night they canceled Luke Cage after two seasons.
Yeah, that's really shocking.
Where a rumor was a week ago that it was going to pick up for season three. And, you know, so there's some talk that Disney's doing this because they want to move it all, go ahead and buy the stuff back now so you can put it on a streaming service.
Yeah.
But I think also Iron Fist and Luke Cage just haven't been as well received, where Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and The Punisher have been well received. We know they're making a Punisher season two. I think they're making Jessica Jones 3. Daredevil season 3 just hit. So it's hard to say what's going on without an official announcement from Disney. I haven't watched Luke Cage yet. Did you watch any of it?
I watched the first season, and I did like the first season.
Well, I did watch the first episode.
Yeah. And then I haven't watched the second season. I was assuming that with Luke Cage, with Iron Fist, being canceled, that maybe, okay, Iron Fist is just going to show up as a cameo in Luke Cage. And then they cancel Luke Cage, and I'm like, well, what the heck?
Maybe we'll get a Heroes for Hire, right. But and I wonder how, I don't know how Netflix's algorithms work. Like, season two of Luke Cage has only been on a month. Iron Fist has only been on, 2 months for Luke Cage. Iron Fist has only been on for a month. I guess if they don't get those initial ratings in the first few weeks, they consider it a failure. Because I know some people, it takes them a while to get to a show to binge watch it.
Yeah.
Sometimes just 13 episodes, it takes me 13 weeks to watch it. I'll watch one a week. I don't have the time to sit down and binge watch it.
Yeah, it's hard.
So I wonder how the ratings work or if there's more to this with the whole Disney deal, you know, and everything. Mr. White, you're over here laughing on over here. Sorry, folks, for some little three-year-old background noise.
Yeah.
But so I wonder how it works. But hopefully, Sweet Christmas, it's renewed on the Disney streaming service at some point.
Yeah,
because
we'll
I really
see.
Want to see your Heroes for Hire, and I wouldn't mind seeing more Defenders. You know, because I do like these street level Marvel characters, as they call them.
And I don't mind the casting. I just think that with Iron Fist, if there was some better choreography, more so like Daredevil's choreography with the fights, it would be better. And, I really didn't have a problem with Luke Cage at all.
Right.
Yeah, so, we'll see what happens.
But, that's all I got really news-wise, except for you said the director of Dude, Where's My Car? Has passed away.
Yeah, I saw that, and I decided to share it in our group because I was like, I went to the movies with Jackie to go see Dude, Where's My Car? And I thought it, you know, at the time, I thought it was funny. I was a kid, and it's, you know, I like simple humor, something that's stupid. And
he also,
you know,
did one of the Harold and Kumar movies, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Harold and Kumar.
What is his name?
I'll look that up.
We should say his name. We're going to talk about him on the podcast here.
I really should.
But I guess he had been sick for a while, and I guess he succumbed to the illness, and because he was pretty young, 56, I think I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And as you're trying to find his name there, because, you know, we should respect the guy with his name, not just the director. Yes. My car. Did you find
it? It's loading. I have stuff coming from space. Yeah. Danny Lehner.
Okay. So.
Yep, from Harold and Kumar.
Respect to Danny Lehner. Rest in peace, bro, man. And dude, where's my car?
Wow. Yeah, I didn't realize who Harold was from Harold and Kumar. It's from Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know John Chow?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. No, it's John Chow. All right, well, that's all the news we got. Luke Cage and the director we just talked about. So let's talk about next week's movie. As we get to the end of October and just about wrap up Halloween Horrors Month, and we're going to do a fun movie that you can watch with the family.
Yes.
And it's a favorite around our household. My wife loves this movie. We're going to go and talk about Jack Skellington and his crew at The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Welcome to an extraordinary world filled with magic and wonder. Open your mind and let yourself go to a place where every day is Halloween and every night Jack Skellington,
I am the Pumpkin King,
dreams of something different.
What is this?
It's someplace new.
Jack, look out!
What's this? There's color everywhere. What's this? There's white things in the air. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. Wake up, Jack. This isn't fair.
What is this?
Haven't you heard of peace on earth and goodwill toward men?
Touchstone Pictures presents the enchanting story of two very special dreamers and the holiday spirit that brought them together. From the imagination of Tim Burton comes The Nightmare Before Christmas.
And what did Santa bring you, honey?
Yes, and Santa Claus.
And you know, this is a movie that we'll talk about more next week, obviously, but it's grown on me over the years. I remember when I initially watched that, I didn't care for it that much. I was like, thought it was okay. And I think a lot of people felt that way. But it's become a classic over the years. And the argument is whether it's a Halloween movie or a Christmas movie. And that's kind of why we're doing it at the end of the month. Because it leads into Halloween, which also leads into Christmas. Because everyone knows that Halloween is kind of the kickoff for the holiday season as you get ready for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And it's done by Tim Burton. It's, of course, stop-motion animation. It's a fun movie. It's a really fun movie. It's music in it. There's really great
graphics. It starts off with the best song in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's really great graphics and effects in it. It's all done with amazing stop motion animation. It's colorful. It's imagery. It's just a really
lot of time making those figurines.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
And it's become kind of a cult hit over the years. Even though it's mainstream, it's also a cult hit.
Oh, yeah.
There's people that really live by this movie, and there's collectibles out there that are worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I have a friend that has a German Shepherd. He named his dog Zero, and they even made a mock costume, and he had a saddle where Jack Skellington could ride on him.
And we've been to Compalooza and other cons and seen a lot of Nightmare Before Christmas cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a movie that a lot of people really love, and it's got a close place in a lot of people's heart. So we're going to talk next week about The Nightmare Before Christmas on Halloween Horrors Month here on the Rebel Radio Podcast. So that should be a fun one.
Yeah.
And we've done a couple rated R movies in a row that I had to watch at night. This one next week we can do and watch while the kids are awake.
That's right.
Which is kind of good.
And they won't be running everywhere. Well, like while we're trying to watch, they'll actually be sitting down watching.
Oh, yeah. My kids love it. So that'll be a fun one. So that's next week in the Rebel Radio Podcast. And as far as I know, that's all I've got this week that I can think of.
That's all I've got.
Thank you for anyone listening on WBLZmedia.com on Ironic Radio. And as always, go to the RebelRadioPodcast.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And buy a shirt. Donate to us if you want. You know, we're not begging. We're just saying it's there if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And
throw a buck our way.
We appreciate all the support. Shout out to my friend Naomi for the kind compliment this week about the show and everything. And Miguel, I love you, bro, but I hope the Red Sox lose.
That's right. Sorry, I got icy man. Hot with your name on it.
Even though we beat the Dodgers last year, if they win game 7 tonight and they make it, I'm going to root for them in the series. Sorry, man. It's just the way it's got to be.
That's right.
Much love to you, brother. We always thank you, Miguel, for all the support you give to the Rebel Radio Podcast. And we really do. We really mean that, despite we won the Red Sox to lose.
Yes.
But as always, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And until next time, just go there and do it.
This is Walter Simonson. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?